A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You know, Korn, this whole show runs on GPU compute, and we wouldn't be here without Modal.
Seriously. And that's what powers all our text-to-speech. Everything you're hearing right now.
They're an AI infrastructure platform. Developers use them to run GPU workloads in the cloud with zero infrastructure headache.
If you're building anything with AI, check them out. Modal.com. Daniel sent us this one, and I have to say, it might be the most personally relatable prompt we've received in a while. He wants a ranked countdown, ascending absurdity, of the most pointless single-use kitchen gadgets ever sold. Egg cubers, avocado slices, banana slices, motorized ice cream cones, electric s'mores makers, herb scissors, quesadilla makers, hot dog toasters, strawberry hullers, pancake batter dispenser pens. Ranked from okay. I can see why someone bought this all the way up to who approved this in a board meeting. The question underneath all of it, how did any of these things exist?
I have a banana slicer story.
Of course you do. You are...
A patient. This is back in my pediatrics days. Her mother comes in for the kid's well visit, and she's just vibrating with excitement. Not about the kid. About a banana slicer she bought. Described it to me for about 4 minutes. It has a handle. It has these little parallel blades. You press it down. The banana becomes uniform coins in one motion. She said, and I am paraphrasing only slightly, Herman, it changed my mornings.
It changed her mornings.
It changed her mornings. And I'm sitting there thinking, the banana slicer was patented in 2003 by a man named Joseph DiCarlo. This device has existed for over 2 decades. It has been changing mornings for over 2 decades. And a knife has existed for roughly 2.5 million years.
I want to be very careful here, because I also own a banana slicer.
You do not.
I found it in the kitchen, and I assumed it was some kind of leaf pressing tool. I have been using it for leaf medicine for about 6 months.
That is genuinely upsetting.
It works great. Very uniform leaf sections. I don't know what DiCarlo intended, but I think I'm getting more out of it than anyone who used it on a banana.
The global kitchen gadgets market is projected to reach $1.2 trillion by 2027. $1.2 trillion. That includes serious equipment, obviously, but a non-trivial slice of that number is things like banana slicers and the 11 other objects we're about to discuss.
$1.2 trillion of humans looking at a problem that a knife already solves and thinking... But what if there were a dedicated unit for this specific task?
The unitasker phenomenon. We explored the psychology behind this pretty thoroughly in an earlier episode, so I don't want to retread all of that. But today we're not here to explain why people buy these things. We're here to look at the specific items and appreciate each one individually for the particular flavor of chaos it represents.
A connoisseurship of absurdity.
And I want to say up front, some of these I have genuine affection for. There's a difference between useless and delightful. Some of these gadgets are both, and that's almost an achievement.
By the way, today's script is courtesy of Chord Sonnet 4.6, who I imagine researched this topic with the same energy I bring to napping, which is to say, complete commitment.
A natural fit for a topic about things that technically function but may not be strictly necessary.
I am necessary. Right, so we've got our list, we've got our ranking, ascending absurdity. Let's establish the bottom of the scale first, because I think there's a genuine spectrum here. Some of these gadgets, you squint at them and you can construct a defense. Not a good defense, but a defense. Others, there is no argument. There is only the void.
The void has a patent number.
The void has a patent number, and it ships in 2 days with free returns. Let's do this. Honestly, it's such a niche product, it's practically a unitasker.
Speaking of unitaskers, what actually makes something a unitasker in the kitchen sense? Because I think the line is fuzzier than people assume.
It does one thing and only one thing. And the thing it does was already handled by something you own.
That's close. I'd tighten it slightly. The defining feature isn't really the single function, it's that the function can't transfer. A whisk is technically a single function tool, but the motion, the wrist mechanics, the basic physics of it, those translate. You can improvise with it. A banana slicer cannot become anything else. It is a banana slicer until it dies.
A knife, meanwhile, has been quietly doing everything for 2.5 million years and asking for nothing in return.
Which is the real indictment. And this isn't a modern problem. The Victorians were obsessed with specialized kitchen equipment. There are Victorian-era asparagus tongs, asparagus cradles, asparagus servers, asparagus kettles. Dedicated hardware for one vegetable across 4 form factors.
The Victorians had a lot of feelings about asparagus.
They had a lot of feelings about demonstrating that you own the correct object for every conceivable task. That's the social history underneath all of this. The gadget signals that you're the kind of household that takes this seriously. Whatever this is.
The banana slicer is actually Victorian asparagus tongs with better marketing.
The mechanism is the same. The difference is that somewhere between the asparagus kettle and the banana slicer, manufacturing got cheap enough that you could produce these objects at a price point where the impulse purchase becomes rational. The asparagus kettle cost real money. The banana slicer costs $8.
$8 is below the threshold of regret.
Below the threshold of regret, that's exactly it. Which is why we now have an industry. Shall we get into the actual ranking?
The gadgets await.
Starting at the defensible end.
Multiple blades stacked parallel. You run them through a bunch of chives or parsley. You get a pile of cut herbs in about 4 seconds instead of 40. I can see it.
The pitch is real. The mechanism is legitimate. You've got 5 blades running simultaneously, so you're reducing the task time by a factor of 5, roughly. If you cook with fresh herbs every single day, the math almost works. The problem is the cleaning. Each blade has its own gap. There are 4 gaps total. Fresh herbs are wet and fibrous, and they pack into those gaps in a way that takes longer to clean than the time you saved cutting.
The gadget creates a new problem to solve the original problem, and the new problem is worse.
The net time savings across a typical use cycle is probably negative, but the scissor sits in the drawer and it feels purposeful. That's worth something psychologically.
It's a very confident-looking object.
It really is. Okay, moving up the scale.
Now here, I want to play devil's advocate. Hulling strawberries manually with a knife is actually a slightly annoying task. You lose a lot of fruit if you're careless.
That's a real point. The huller is a small spring-loaded plunger. You press it into the top of the berry, twist, pull. The hull comes out cleanly. In theory, you preserve more of the fruit than a knife cut. In practice, the spring mechanism on most of these is calibrated for an average strawberry, and strawberries are not average. They vary enormously. Small ones, the plunger goes straight through. Large ones, you don't get a clean extraction. So you end up with a device that works on maybe 60% of your actual strawberries.
That's a passing grade if you're being generous.
It costs about $12. So you're paying $12 for a device that handles 3/5 of your strawberries adequately.
I respect the honesty of that failure rate. It's not pretending to be something it isn't. Falls short on the physics.
The avocado slicer is where things start to get interesting. The avocado slicer is typically a 3-in-1 tool. It splits the avocado, removes the pit, and slices the flesh in one sequence of motions. And on paper, this sounds like genuine engineering. Someone looked at a multi-step process and designed a device to streamline it. The pit removal mechanism is a plastic disc that you press against the pit and it grips via suction or friction and you twist it out. This works occasionally. When it doesn't work, you are pressing a plastic disc against a large slippery seed inside a fruit you are holding in your non-dominant hand.
That sounds like a liability waiver waiting to happen.
There is an entire genre of avocado-related emergency room visits, the avocado hand injury. Surgeons have a name for it. The avocado slicer was meant to solve this, and in the cases where the pit mechanism fails, it arguably makes it worse because you've added a plastic lever to the equation.
The safety gadget introduced a new safety hazard.
With slightly more mechanical advantage, yes. The slicing portion, to be fair, is actually fine. A plastic fan blade that cuts the flesh into uniform segments, that part works. It's the pit removal that's the problem, and that's the only part of the process that was actually dangerous to begin with.
They solved the easy part and complicated the hard part.
That's the avocado slicer in one sentence.
Now the egg cuber.
The egg cuber.
I have been waiting for this one.
A hard-boiled egg is an oblate sphere. The egg cuber takes that egg and, through the application of a hinged mold and significant manual pressure, reshapes it into a cube while it's still warm and pliable. The result is a cubic hard-boiled egg. The answer, and I want to be careful here because there is an answer, is bento boxes. Uniform shapes pack more efficiently. A cubic egg tiles. Spherical eggs roll and waste space.
That is a real argument.
It is a real argument. It is also an argument that applies to approximately 0% of the people who actually purchased an egg cuber.
How many people are optimizing their bento box packing density?
But the existence of the argument is what makes the egg cuber defensible enough to sell. You can tell yourself a story. The story involves geometry and efficiency, and you are a person who takes their lunch seriously.
The egg cuber is a self-narrative device that happens to also reshape eggs.
The cubic egg, I'll say this, is unsettling to look at. There is something that the human brain did not anticipate encountering. A cube of egg. It feels like it came from a parallel universe where evolution took a slightly different turn.
A universe I want no part of.
The taste is identical, which makes it worse somehow. You go through the whole process. You have your cube, you bite into it, and it tastes exactly like a normal egg. The cube contributed nothing to the experience except a mild existential unease.
Worth the $12.99.
Arguably worth it just for that moment of unease, which is more than some of these gadgets can claim.
The motorized ice cream cone, no? That's where we leave the defensible hemisphere entirely.
Oh, we are firmly in new territory with that one.
Walk me through the mechanism, because I need to hear you say it out loud.
You hold a battery-powered handle. The handle rotates. The ice cream cone sits in the handle and spins. You hold your tongue still. The cone comes to you.
The cone comes to you.
The innovation is that your tongue no longer has to move in a circle. The device does the circling. You are relieved of the rotational burden of eating ice cream.
I have to ask, what is the rotational burden? What injury or hardship prompted someone to file a patent on this?
There is no documented problem this solves. The human tongue is among the most dexterous and tireless muscles in the body. It does not fatigue during ice cream consumption. Nobody has ever set down a cone halfway through and said, "I simply cannot continue. The rotation has defeated me." Yet someone sat in a room, possibly a room with a whiteboard, and said, "What if the cone moved instead?"
Someone pitched this. Someone made a slide deck. Someone said, "The market is ready."
The market, apparently, was ready. Not in enormous numbers, but they sell, which means there are people who looked at this object and thought, yes, this addresses something I have been experiencing.
I want to know what those people think they've been experiencing.
My working theory is that it's not about the ice cream at all. It's about the novelty of the object. You bring this to a backyard barbecue, and it becomes a conversation piece. It becomes a thing you do. The ice cream is almost incidental.
It's a social performance device that also dispenses ice cream.
Which, if you frame it that way, has more utility than the egg cuber. At least the motorized cone generates a reaction. The egg cube generates unease. The motorized cone generates laughter, which is a real output.
I'm going to need a moment to process the fact that we just gave points to the motorized ice cream cone.
The grading system is relative. That's the thing about a scale. Everything is measured against the other items on it.
The electric s'mores maker.
Now here is a device that took something requiring fire. An open flame, the outdoors, the smell of wood smoke, a stick, the entire cultural context of camping, and said, what if we did all of that on your countertop with a heating element?
They took a campfire experience and put it in a box.
In doing so, they stripped out every single thing that makes a s'more a s'more. The s'more is not really about the chocolate and the marshmallow and the graham cracker. Those are the ingredients. The s'more is about the fire. It's about burning the marshmallow accidentally and eating it anyway. It's about the imprecision of the whole thing.
The charred outside and the molten inside that you didn't fully plan for.
The electric s'mores maker produces a consistent, evenly heated marshmallow every time, which is, culinarily speaking, the worst possible outcome.
You've eliminated the variance, and the variance was the point.
And the environmental side of this is worth noting, because the s'mores maker is a good example of the broader problem. You've got a plastic and metal appliance. Probably manufactured overseas, packaged in a cardboard and plastic box, shipped across an ocean to produce a snack that a twig and a lighter could produce in 30 seconds.
The life cycle analysis on that object must be extraordinary.
There was a piece in a design journal a couple of years back that looked at the carbon footprint of single-use kitchen gadgets as a category, and the finding was essentially that the manufacturing and shipping emissions of most of these devices will never be offset by their actual use. A gadget used twice a year for 3 years and then discarded has a per-use environmental cost that's staggering compared to a knife or a wooden spoon.
Most of these end up in landfill.
Because they're not built to be repaired and they're not built to be recycled. The mixed materials, plastic handle, metal blades, rubber grips, these don't separate cleanly. So the whole object goes into general waste.
Then someone buys the next version of the same gadget 2 Christmases later.
The gift economy is a significant driver here. A huge proportion of these things are purchased as gifts. And the gift dynamic removes the normal friction of the purchasing decision. If you're buying for yourself, you might pause and think, do I actually need a motorized ice cream cone? But if you're buying for someone else, the question becomes, is this funny and does it fit in a box? And the answer to both is yes.
The gift removes the accountability. Nobody has to live with the decision.
Except the recipient, who now has a motorized ice cream cone in their drawer.
Next to the strawberry huller and the herb scissors.
The drawer of good intentions.
Every kitchen has one.
Every kitchen has one. And the thing is, I don't think the existence of this drawer is purely a failure. There's something in the human impulse toward specialized tools that connects back to something real. We are a species that makes things. We look at a problem, even a trivial one, even an imaginary one, and we want to build a solution. The banana slicer is a bad solution to a non-problem, but the instinct behind it is the same instinct behind every useful thing we've ever made.
That's a very generous reading of the hot dog toaster.
I'm choosing to be generous.
The hot dog toaster, for anyone unfamiliar, is a toaster with cylindrical vertical slots. You drop a hot dog in one slot and a bun in the other, and it toasts both simultaneously.
Which, again, there is an argument. Toasting a bun improves a hot dog. That's a defensible culinary position. The device is trying to streamline a real step.
Except a toaster already toasts buns. You lay the bun flat in the slot.
The hot dog toaster is solving a problem that was already solved by the device sitting next to it on the counter.
It's a toaster that forgot toasters exist.
The hot dog cylinder, the vertical cylindrical slot, it's chrome-plated, it looks purposeful, it has the visual vocabulary of serious kitchen equipment. Someone put real design work into making this object look credible.
Which is its own kind of achievement. The design is working harder than the function.
That's true of quite a few of these. The quesadilla maker is another example. Hinged plates, non-stick surface, it clamps down and heats from both sides simultaneously. And the pitch is that you get a perfectly even quesadilla without having to flip it.
You do not have to flip a quesadilla in a pan. You flip it once. It takes 3 seconds.
The quesadilla maker saves you one flip and in exchange requires you to store a device approximately the size of a small briefcase.
The storage footprint is the real indictment of all of these. Kitchen storage is finite. Every one of these objects is displacing something else.
Collectively, the single-use gadget category is one of the biggest drivers of kitchen clutter, which is its own knock-on effect. People buy gadgets to make cooking easier, the gadgets accumulate, the kitchen becomes harder to navigate, cooking becomes more stressful.
The gadgets are undermining the purpose they were sold to serve.
The kitchen gadget industry, which as we noted is heading toward an enormous market size, is partly sustained by the problem it creates. You need a drawer organizer for the gadgets. You need a bigger kitchen for the organizer. At some point, you
need a storage unit for the storage unit.
At which point, you have spent more on the ecosystem than on the original problem you were trying to solve.
What do you actually do? If someone is standing in a kitchen shop right now, eyeing a pancake batter dispenser pen, what's the test?
The one task question. Ask yourself, does this device do something my existing tools cannot do, or does it do something they can already do, just with more steps and a worse cleanup? The pancake batter pen dispenses batter in controlled amounts for making shapes. A squeeze bottle does the same thing. A squeeze bottle costs $2, fits in a drawer, and also works for condiments, sauces, salad dressings, anything liquid you want to portion.
The squeeze bottle is doing 12 jobs. The batter pen is doing one badly.
The squeeze bottle doesn't require you to remember which drawer you put the batter pen in, because you only use it during the 3-week phase every 18 months when you decide you're going to make pancake art.
The phase always ends.
The phase always ends. The device remains.
There's also the question of what you're actually bad at, because some of these gadgets are solving a skill gap for someone. The avocado slicer, we roasted it earlier, but if someone has limited hand strength or dexterity, the integrated design might actually matter.
That's a real point. The honest version of the purchase decision is this solving a problem I actually have, not a problem I imagine I might have? The imaginary problem is where most of these live. You see the strawberry huller and you think, I do sometimes find hulling strawberries slightly annoying. But annoying is not the same as difficult. A paring knife solves annoying. You don't need a $12 spring-loaded mechanism for annoying.
The threshold question. Is this a real obstacle or a mild inconvenience I've briefly dramatized?
The second test is the drawer test. Imagine it in your drawer in 6 months. Not the day you buy it, not the first Saturday you use it. 6 months in, when the novelty is gone and it's competing for space with everything else. Does it still earn its place?
If you can't picture yourself reaching for it in February, don't buy it in December.
Which is also, not coincidentally, when most of these are purchased.
The gift season creates a very specific kind of optimism.
And for gifts specifically, the better move is almost always consumables or experiences over objects. A good jar of spice blend, a nice olive oil, a cooking class, things that get used up or leave no footprint.
Things that don't end up in the drawer of good intentions.
The drawer has enough occupants.
Which raises the actual question underneath all of this. Will the drawer ever empty? Will we reach a point where people just stop buying these things?
I don't know. The market data suggests no. That projection toward a $1 trillion kitchen gadgets market by 2027 is not a market in decline. It's a market accelerating.
AI is coming for the kitchen.
It already has. There are smart cutting boards now that weigh your ingredients and give you nutritional data in real time. There are connected air fryers that adjust temperature based on what you put in them. The gadget is getting smarter, which raises an interesting question about whether the unitasker problem gets better or worse.
My instinct is worse. A smart avocado slicer is still an avocado slicer. You've added a battery and a Bluetooth connection to a problem that didn't need either.
The connectivity doesn't change the fundamental geometry. But there's a version of this where convergence actually solves the problem. A device that does 20 things intelligently is not a unitasker. The question is whether the industry builds toward that or just keeps adding chips to single-purpose objects and calling it innovation.
The motorized ice cream cone with an app.
I am afraid that exists.
It probably does. Somewhere there is a Kickstarter.
There is always a Kickstarter. But I think the more interesting question is whether the next generation of home cooks develops a different relationship with the kitchen. There's a real movement, particularly among younger cooks, toward fewer, better tools. The knife skills revival. The cast iron renaissance. The idea that mastery of a small set of real tools is more satisfying than a drawer full of substitutes.
Which is not a new idea. It's just periodically rediscovered.
Every generation rediscovers it, usually after filling a drawer.
The drawer is the tuition.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing, as always, the most organized chaos in podcasting. And a quick word to Modal, who keep our pipeline running without complaint, which given the volume of gadget nonsense we fed it today, is impressive.
This has been my weird prompts. If you've enjoyed the episode, a review on Spotify goes a long way and we do read them. Even the ones that just say Egg Cuba. Until next time.
This episode's script was written by Claude Sonnet 4.6 with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head,
send it in, we'll chase the thread.
My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host.
My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.